Welcome back to ContraCast. This is episode 25 for February 15, 2010. My name is Paul Kwiatkowski, and with me today are my two most common hosts, John Kwiatkowski and Mike Pulaski. How are you doing, guys?
I'm doing pretty good, Paul.
Good times, good times. I hope there's not too many acoustics going on. I can hear a little bit of an echo, but...
That's not that bad on my end.
We'll make do. We started recording the show a little while ago, or cough recording. We actually didn't record anything. And it turns out my apartment, my internet has been terrible for the last couple of days, and it is just too slow to do anything. It took me about an hour last night using my connection to download today's app of the week, which is 37 megabytes. So it's like being in 1997 all over again. So, today we have a number of things to discuss, and basically the news is going to be the topics, but let me go ahead and introduce for you what the topics are going to be in the news, basically. So, on Tuesday last week, Google announced and rolled out Google Buzz. They're entering the social media space, and we will discuss this. On Wednesday, Google announced their plans to build a fiber optic high-speed internet connection in some place of the country.
Hopefully in Charlotte.
Yeah, you have to basically petition them, but chances are they're built in San Francisco anyway.
yeah, true.
The very next day, it was announced that Google, again, acquired a social search startup named Aardvark, or Vark.com, and we will also discuss that. And finally today is day one of the Mobile World Conference, or not, I don't think it's called that. We'll look it up.
Yeah.
So, do you know exactly? John, can you do that?
Okay, got it.
What MWC is, because I keep calling it Mobile World Conference, and I don't think that's it. But so Microsoft announced and unveiled... Mobile World Congress, okay. It's in Europe, so maybe that, you know. They announced and unveiled Windows Phone 7 series, which is, as you can tell, a super catchy name that everyone's going to be telling all their friends about. Basically, this is Windows Mobile 7, which has been rumored for years, and we'll get to why it looks like it took them this long to create it and what it could or couldn't mean for the mobile space. And that is basically the news for the week and also the topic. So we'll get back to those in just a few minutes. For now, what we're going to talk about is the link of the week and the app of the week, which we always do. And Mike, you picked the link of the week, so I'll let you discuss it.
The link of the week is an easy way to share files with friends. I know everyone uses BitTorrent to share files and like fairly large files, but whenever you want to share that file with like a friend and no one else, you just you don't have any program to use for it. So I'm Lifehacker today. They found a program called Opera Unite, and it's a program that's through Opera browser. Apparently, it's been there for a while. To use it, you just download Opera Browser, and it's built in like a plugin to Opera Browser. And all you do is just upload your files, and it gives you a link and a password, and you just give your friends that link and password, and all they have to do is just click on the link through any web browser. They don't need Opera Browser or anything, and they can download it at fairly fast speeds. So.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking. So instead of, for instance, the last couple weeks I've been using Google Docs to upload files to, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do archive.org. You don't have to do any, rapid share, media share, those really slow media download services.
Oh, yeah. The main thing is you don't need servers, or you don't need, like, peers as with torrents. So... It should go pretty fast, and it's free. All you have to do is make an account, and it's just unlimited upload and download, I think. And you can also create your own media sharing library to share music over the web with, so that like you can play any of your music just through the web from any computer just by accessing it on the internet. So that's also pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks like something to definitely try. you know, the only downside is you have to download and use the Opera browser to do it, which isn't such a big deal, but it's,
yeah.
I mean, well, I mean, for someone like me who doesn't, you know, who doesn't use that browser. But, and that is the link of the week, and we'll include a link to both the Lifehacker article that maybe gives you some information about it, and also the Opera browser website so you can download it right away. The app of the week is a game called Plants vs. Zombies, which is PopCap Games' take on the tower defense genre. And basically, it's set up in such a way that there's like a lawn, and you plant plants to shoot at zombies, and it sounds completely weird and like you would never enjoy it. But when it comes down to is it's every bit as addicting as Bejeweled or Peggle, and it's at $3, it's a total steal. It's the exact same game you get on the PC, but it's $3, and the PC version is $20. So definitely worth checking out if you are interested, and you should be if you have an iPod or iPhone. So let's move on then to the news or topics of the week. Like we already mentioned, the four things we're going to be covering in the news section. Let's start off with Google Buzz, though, and discuss that just a bit. So I have been using Google Buzz, I mean, as much as not a whole lot, but I've set it up, you know. John, have you done anything with it?
I've briefly looked at it. I've not set it up yet.
And Mike, how about you?
I briefly looked at it. I also haven't, you know, set it up or used it. It looks fairly similar to Twitter.
So basically what Buzz is it's integrated into Gmail. So the whole Gmail audience basically has the potential to be using it. I think unless I'm wrong, that it is opt out. And that if you're using Gmail, it's basically already set up for you.
Yeah.
But it's got some cool features. It basically has the quick status update business that is Twitter, and then it has the link sharing stuff as well, and it has the multimedia capabilities of Facebook. So this is, if you're looking at this, it's like a pretty decent meeting of the two, where you've got people that are, you know, like, for instance, I follow Leo Laporte on there. He's a podcaster. And rather than just, he says, I have to get new contacts tomorrow. And rather than just talk about contact, you know, what he's getting, he posts a picture of the contacts. And then people that are interested, comment below that. And so it's got the comments and everything of Facebook with some of Twitter's simplicity in it. But the best thing to me is that you can connect other sites to it, and those, it automatically posts your activity, your recent activity on other sites. So if you look at my feed, I've got mainly tweets, a few things from Buzz, some blog posts, and some posting, like a post to Flickr and stuff that I connected with it. And it's not perfect. I mean, I cannot connect my WordPress blog to it, and you can't connect Facebook yet, but I've got my Blogger blogs are connected, and Twitter's connected, and Flickr's connected, and a handful of other things. So instead of you having to go to Buzz and remember to post these things in, I just have it set up so that it automatically pulls this information, which is nice, because you don't have to really think about using Buzz. Especially because if you use Gmail as your primary email, like I do, when you log in, it's got just a below the inbox, you got a little Buzz area that keeps you up to date with Buzz posted and everything, and then discussions and whatnot. And then if you comment on a Buzz, it will post any responses in your inbox too. So if you, for instance, you comment on a friend's thing and then another friend comments, you don't have to go find that. They tell you in your inbox. So it seems useful. I mean, it's just the first week, and so there's not really a definite area where we know where this is going to go. And it's weird because I had 3 followers earlier today because I had 4 followers earlier. It's not Twitter just yet, but then I came back and I had 59 followers. So I'm wondering, you know, if people are just like wholesale following everyone that has a Buzz profile.
Yeah, maybe.
Or what. But who knows. So I recommend setting it up at least to aggregate your content from other websites, you know. Because at the very least it can't hurt to keep it up and running with posting your tweets to, perhaps. And it's just a nice way to socialize your Google profile. Because, you know, my profile is, it's there, but I don't anticipate many people ever going to see it. Oh, and another thing I've heard is that it instantly indexes links and things you put on it. So, you know, I tried it and it didn't see anything amazing, but it's supposed to be just a great way that Google can index different things that, you know, you maybe want it to be able to index. So in my ongoing quest to get my Facebook profile to show up as number one when you type in my name, I posted it and it didn't seem to do much, but who knows. So let's get on to the next topic. This is just this is Tuesday's news from last week. And there's a lot to be seen for exactly what Google Buzz is going to do for the world. So the next one was Google and their ISP announcement. And do either of you want to explain a little more, or should I do it?
I'll go for it, Paul.
Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. I can see that my research for 5 minutes of interesting paid off just a little bit. So Google... wants to provide a high-speed network that they're actually going to be willing to share with people that will provide internet at speeds of 1 gigabit, which is 1,024 megabytes per second, which is ridiculous to think about. You know, if you think about current data speeds, you know, the average speed in the United States is 4.8 megabytes per second.
What's the average in Japan?
And that means that Google's internet is 100 times faster than the average American connection. Japan is at 61 megabytes per second. So Japan, it's not, you know, it's more like 14 times as fast as Japan. But that's the fastest in the world. So if that's a rare case too. There's nothing else really even close. But this is a pretty cool concept, and I wonder how it's going to play out. They say they're going to offer competitive pricing, and they're going to provide it at start for 50,000 people at the minimum and up to 500,000 people. Like I said, they're going to provide it to other people. The question was asked in one of Mashable's Buzz posts this week, would you want Google as your ISP? And so... let me ask you guys, would you want Google as your ISP? John, how about you first?
Totally.
You would?
Yeah.
What particularly, why?
I'm tired of the standard companies we have just around. I mean, like, we have Time Warner for everything, and they own everyone's internet.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm tired of the ones we've had forever that really haven't upgraded at all.
Mike?
Yeah, I agree with the same thing. It just seems like the internet service providers, they can definitely provide more bandwidth, and the only reason they do it is if you pay more, and it just seems like the U.S. has been, like, excuse my French, but royally screwed when it comes to internet. We just get the lower end of the bandwidth, and we end up paying, like, so much, and everybody else across the country pays so little.
Now, here's the confounding question, and this is, you know, depends on your trust in Google, but... you realize that for a lot of people, I use so many Google services. If Google was your ISP, they would literally control, like, most of your internet experience. I mean, I type every text thing I do, except for final format editing papers, in Google Docs. I use Gmail as my primary email. I'm using Buzz now. I just set up my Google Calendar the other day. My Google profile is... set up and is a source of information for people. I've been using Aardvark for a week and a half now, and then Google up and bought that. YouTube is Google, and that's the biggest video sharing site online.
And if Google wants to be a monopoly, I am all for it. I do not care if they rule this
country.
That's
the thing.
I mean, they're doing a great job doing what they're doing.
That's the dissenting view, but honestly, compared to how the internet is treated by cable companies, I feel like they think internet is the same deal as cable and as other things. You should have to pay more if you want better stuff, and it's,
Internet was originally invented for military purposes, but when they got it to the public, it was supposed to be like the free exchange of information, and they just made it into like another expense.
Well, I think that if they released this 1 gigabit connection, it could have profound effects. I mean, for instance, when you have that fast, web broadcasting becomes much easier. Because if you're a company like, for instance, Twit, This Week in Tech, you're not going to have to pay a ton of money to your cable provider to give you a massive amount of bandwidth. You're going to have the bandwidth you need plus a surplus, right from the start. 1 gigabyte per second, that's certainly enough to broadcast, 1080p across the internet and do other things at the same time. And that's just a short-sighted view of what you could do with 1 gigabyte per second.
I just hope this stuff makes it to mainstream in a couple of years, like they actually get it, across the United States.
Well, my hope would be that they release it to a large number of people, and if Google isn't going to be the ISP in the nation, if they set up competitive pricing so that this isn't like, $300 a month for this ultra fast internet, but maybe $30-$40 a month. Uh-huh. And then they provide the tools to cable companies and everyone else to lay these lines, you're going to have really fast. It's like there's a town somewhere in the Midwest that they were fed up with paying for internet from their cable provider or something, and they actually laid their own fiber optic connection for the town and gave the town really high-speed internet. That's what we really want in the entire country,
I mean, I don't know what business would not... business or like state or city would not support that.
It's one of those things, especially in looking into the future, just a handful of years, we should, if we have a gigabyte connection, there's no need to ever leave my apartment and drive over to Mike's place because I don't have fast enough internet over there, or to wait an hour to download a 37 megabyte application. Just based off numbers, this is such an awesome idea and possibility that could really jumpstart using the internet for more than just social media and everything, and really start pushing us into the future with how we access data on the go and everything like that. But there's my little spiel about the internet. And how fast it's
going to be. I just hope it comes near us. Hopefully, Charlotte.
I know. Now let's move on to Aardvark and Google's acquisition thereof. Let me just lay what Aardvark is out real quick. Aardvark is a social media or social search. I keep on saying social media in my internship, but social search startup company that works in a way kind of like Yahoo Answers. People ask questions that are not typically easily answered on Google. Like, I'm going to look through a few of the ones that I could possibly answer here. Do you know when Windows Mobile 7 handsets will be released and to what networks? Well, you can't really find that on Google very easily. People ask math questions, they ask preference questions, they ask all sorts of business.
So if high school kids get find that,
well,
be a spiel of a million high school questions.
There aren't like many solid math questions, but it's pretty interesting, and it's one of those things that's kind of addictive. to use because you like answering questions. I mean, I'm looking over, I've asked 5 questions and I've answered 84. And it's one of those things where if you think you might be able to find it quickly on Google, you can. I mean, I go type in some things and give links to people. But it's just, it's kind of fun to use. Now, the more interesting thing is that Google has now acquired them. And the initial reaction from various people is, well, Aardvark is in direct competition with Google. Now, Aardvark has 70,000 users. 70,000 users. That is slightly less than the number. I mean, that, you know, that's, Google has an infinite number more people that use them.
And they have for 50 million.
What's that?
And Google bought them for $50 million.
Yeah, they bought them for a reported $50 million, which is like an awful lot of money for Aardvark. Aardvark was written by PhDs in artificial intelligence who they set up an algorithm such that you write what you're maybe knowledgeable about, and then it examines your social circle that you connect with Aardvark, and it starts, you know, it asks people questions within your social circle, and it asks you questions based off of what you might be able to answer, based off of what you told it, and based off of the sort of things you write about and whatnot. And so what you're looking at is something, so if someone asks a question about Xbox, and you've written that you might be able to answer it, or you've written about it in one of your profiles somewhere that it's looking at, and it pushes the question to you through whatever means. It'll show up if you are looking through questions that are set up for you to answer on a website, but it will also directly push questions to you if you're online through Google Chat, Facebook Chat, Twitter, a handful of other things, which is pretty cool. So if you are just like, I happen to leave my Gmail open all the time, and you know, maybe once every 90 minutes I'll hear a little ba-dunk from a Gmail chat, and it's Aardvark asking me if I want to answer a question about Windows 7 or something.
That's
and
cool.
You just type sure, pass, or something else. If you want to answer it, pass it along, or I think stop answering questions about Windows 7, or whatever it might be. And then you just hit sure, and it asks you the question, and if you don't know, you just pass it along or something. So the whole point of this is not to broadly spread things around, but to ask people who might know, and then to keep asking until you get an answer. So that's pretty cool. Now, my thinking on this, and I don't know what you guys think, and I'll just put this forth, I think that this is the beginning of an additional feature on just general Google search, and probably all over Google products, which is just, you know, not finding what you want, ask a real person. And I think that they will start, you know, collecting these answers and setting up a Yahoo Answers type database.
Kind of like a KGB thing of
this is a move against several things. I think it's a Yahoo Answers move. I think it's against the KGB, the Cha-Cha stuff, which are aggressively marketing themselves as, you know, places
Cha-Cha's
to go.
Out of business now.
Oh, really? Well, at least the KGB, you know, YASCA, which I don't understand why they picked that name, Knowledge Generation Bureau, and it's also the Soviet Secret Police.
Yeah, that's what every single time.
But okay, Soviet Secret Police.
Every time.
They know everything anyway. So what do you guys think about that? Do you think we'll start seeing very soon a little additional augmented boxes where you can ask real people questions instead of just searching Google?
That would be awesome if we could. I hope we can.
I mean, certainly the database library of answered questions would be superbly helpful to especially people who have problems with like setting up their televisions or like video games or something.
The funny thing is, as of now, there is no database. And I listen to a number of Twitch shows, you know, and there's one called Net at Night, and they interviewed the CEO of Aardvark probably 8 weeks ago, certainly before he was rolling in cash, they talked to him, and he was giving a very good interview, and his one thing he could not answer was why there was no database. You know, he wants basically what he was saying is he wants people to not try to search a database, but to ask questions, and even though that may be a holistic view of things, or holistic even the right word, no, I don't think it is, but the point is he was trying to come up with these random reasons why there's no database of things previously answered. And I think that now that Google has acquired it, it's no question that we'll probably get that. If only, I mean, from a Google making money standpoint, people looking at answered questions takes you to more sites, takes you to more possible ads, you know. So there's that. Yeah, drink. Okay. What else did we have?
And I looked over that today, and it sounded pretty interesting.
Did you go look? Did you play around with Aardvark at all?
I haven't played around with it. I read up on it.
You should. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I need to.
Yeah, I recommend them. I mean, you can go look at Aardvark, the website. There's a lot of, you know, if you like answering questions for people, it's great. And the thing is, once you answer a question, there's a specific page set up for that question, and you can go there, but it's only viewable to people who have answered it or asked it.
That's cool.
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, it ensures that there won't be a lot of answers, which is kind of strange, but you go there, and so, like, the other night, someone was asking for help, looking for, like, what exactly a bivariate study is. And I've had enough classes to know what a bivariate study is. Uh-huh. And then they were asking about how to find the author biases of a certain study. And so I was helping them with that, too. It's that sort of thing that the additional questions. People will ask you, you know, like, just a question, you know, and just lots of fun stuff. And maybe it's just me, but I really enjoy answering questions for people.
Yeah.
And it's a great place to do that. So the last thing we want to talk about is Windows Phone Series 7, which from now on I'm either going to call Windows 7 by accident, Windows Phone or 7 Series, which I called it today in a blog post. Do either one of you want to introduce this, or should I do it?
I'll go ahead for it. I looked at it for a while today, watched the videos of it, you know, looked at the reviews, you know, what people were saying so far, and I mean, so far it looks really good. I mean, the interface looks really clean, the design of it is very good looking, it rounds itself out well.
It's funny you'd say rounding when everything is square.
Yeah, but it rounds up the design well.
Okay.
Fine, Paul. I'm a design major here.
All right. Carry on. You've been a design major for all of 1 month, so.
Yeah.
Casual.
I know all. I mean, the only thing I'm concerned about is, will it have the apps to back it up?
Yeah, did you read the blog post I wrote today?
No, I have not yet.
You should go look over that, because I know we'll be discussing it. Mike, do you have any words, real quick?
To me, it basically looks like the Zune HD. As you know, I own the Zune HD. Well, not anymore.
Oh,
and
duh.
I owned the Zune HD. I sold it for an iTouch a day ago. But it just looks like the Zune HD, and it... Like, even when they showed the music interface, I was just like, oh, that's straight from Zune HD. Not really that impressed with the home screen.
I wonder how customizable that is.
Yeah, probably not. Like,
or if they're gonna lock that Internet Explorer button there.
It's probably not very customizable. I'm just kind of skeptical about it, seeing as, like, the Zune HD was so hyped, and then... You know,
yeah, I wrote a blog post today about how Microsoft can make this successful, and they basically have to treat Windows Phone 7 the same way they treated Windows 7, which was to hype it and oversell it and, you know, make it the greatest thing ever. Zune HD received very little advertising anywhere, boring commercials. I mean, there's no talking, and then they just show you pictures and stuff. And it's not done anything. I don't know data about it, but there's not enough data. There's not enough sales that they even felt like talking about it in their quarterly report from last quarter.
Yeah.
Although I guess I'm not sure if that fell in the quarter before or what. But the biggest thing to me is that I mean, there are certain things on this phone that look extremely appealing. I mean, obviously, the design of the graphic user interface is completely influenced and taken from the Zune HD, but I like the look of this a lot better. I think using pictures instead of words is a big deal, and I think the bigger screen is going to be a big deal, because this screen is not, it's laid out like a Droid or a Nexus One screen as far as the dimensions go, but it's not as narrow as the Zune HD screen, which is a big deal, because once you use an iPod Touch or an iPhone or a Droid or a Nexus One, the Zune HD screen feels a lot smaller than those. I mean, it feels very small.
Uh-huh, it does.
This seems like it's quite a good size. And then I think there's, you know, I mean, you talked about the Internet Explorer. If this is not opened up, you know, if they lock you down so that only Internet Explorer, that's really bad. I don't think it's that way now. I think there's other browsers.
What are they doing as far as, wireless provider for it? Like, mobile provider?
Well, I mean, if you think of it as mobile now, it's like Android, in that it's on whatever connector. They provide the software, not the hardware.
Uh-huh.
But I wrote about this again today, is that they're going to have to convince people that this is a better platform to use than Android. And, you know, as far as it looks, I mean, it's gorgeous. It's a, you know, Jesus Diaz from Gizmodo said that it's Microsoft out-appled Apple. And they basically said that this looks like an iPhone interface designed in the future, you know. This is the iPhone is, you know, a mix of, is a grid pattern of icons.
Uh-huh.
And they said that, you know, it's basically a remnant of like the Palm era of design, which I agree with when you think about it, you know, which is basically just laying out your icons in a square. This is not that at all. This is big, flashy buttons, minimalist style, and, you know, a very interactive UI. That was one of the things about the Zune HD that's certainly more fun, one of the few things, than the iPod or the iPhone, is that the UI was actually a lot of fun to use, just the way it flips around and everything. I think, though, I mean, they're so far launching it, and they're saying it's very simplistic. You can upload your statuses from one place, so it acts like kind of a ping.fm for status updates. Although I guess that does status updates. I think the thing that's going to be either that's going to make or break it is the applications, though, because the Zune HD I think could have been a much bigger hit if they had released a software developer kit in May, and if they had
made an app store.
Exactly. If they had some sort of split, they had developers on board. As of now, there's just, like, nothing on there. There's a handful of games and a handful of utilities. And when I say handful, I mean, like, you know, 12 games or something. There's just nothing to do.
The only, like, useful app they have on the Zune HD was Twitter, and it's not even close to the free app that you get on iTouch.
Yeah, it's not very good. But there's certainly hope. They've got it on the home screen, there's an Xbox Live button, and they've talked about what they're going to do with that. There's going to be a number, you know, there's going to be, you know, phone-specific games, and there's going to be, like, additional things to help or to work with 360 games, and then there's going to be Xbox Live Arcade games. So the example that Gizmodo gave is, you know, there's the Call of Duty Nazi Zombies, World of War Nazi Zombies on the iPhone. And that is taken directly from the game World at War, last year's World at War, or 2 years ago. But it doesn't do anything for you in-game. It doesn't give you any achievements. It doesn't give you any rewards. They're saying they want to augment your experience by, you know, releasing some sort of mini-game or something for these things, so that maybe you're playing Assassin's Creed, and then you boot up mobile Assassin's Creed, and you explore around a little bit, and that gives you some sort of benefit in the regular game, you know. So it seems like that could be a big deal.
It would be unique just to have separate games for the device, like, you know, Paul's probably going to talk about it later, but mobile Halo on there, and just be able to get achievements on the phone so that it makes the game more fun to play. And then on top of that, it would add to, like, your gamer score on Xbox, your Xbox Live account.
Yeah.
Which would be pretty neat.
So what I put forth, after I made a number of different arguments for how it should succeed or what they could do to make it succeed, I just threw something out that I think, you know, the phones of today have more power than the operating or the consoles of a decade ago. And if you look at, you know, I mean, like the Xbox has a 733 megahertz processor. It's basically a Celeron processor.
Yeah.
And it has a roughly 3 series NVIDIA graphics card. So if you start looking at what it has in it, and then you know, of course, there's different. You can make technical innovation without much when you're limited to a console. If you look at today's phone things, I mean, even, you know, the Zune HD has been disappointing, but it has Tegra, which has a system on chip, and it can play, you know, the Unreal 3 engine.
Mm-hmm.
It can do all these different things. I compared Gameloft's iPhone game Nova to Halo 1, and it's, you know, if you look past the limitations of the 480 by 320 resolution on the iPhone, and you look at just the polygon counts and some of the texture work and everything,
uh-huh,
Nova looks an awful lot like Halo. I mean, and it's meant to, but I mean, as far as exactly what they're able to do with the graphics, it, you know, and when you consider that you used to have to play one on a box that, you know, weighs 10 pounds and sits in front of your TV, and then you're playing another one on a device which is around a quarter of an inch thick. It's pretty crazy. But especially, you know, the hopefully looking forward, I mean, Microsoft they've released just a rough, you know, example of what they're going to be requiring for the hardware on these things. It has to be capacitive screens, has to be multi-touch. So you're not going to get what you got with Windows Mobile 6 and 6.5. So you're not going to have you're not going to have stylus as touching screens. You're not going to have resistive touch screens. You're not going to have no multi-touch, you know. If you look at Windows Mobile 7, it is every bit as impressive as an operating system designed and released in late first decade of the 2000s should be, you know. This doesn't have any of the holdovers of Windows or any of the holdovers of early Mac things, and it doesn't look like iPhone operating system, you know. I've said you know a lot the last few sentences. But basically, though, it's very promising, and I think that if they manage to advertise it well, and if they give a massive incentive to application developers, they stand to grab a sizable portion of the market. I wrote that I think they need 1,000 apps to launch with.
That would be great.
Because I think that if they do anything less, it's just going to look weird. Because if you have 1,000, it makes it look like you're at least, you know, entrenched. If you have less, you know, it's kind of weird. Because you've got you're competing against iPhone, which has 140,000 plus applications. However stupid many of them are, there's 140,000 applications, and I guarantee you there's at least 1,000 of them that are, you know, extremely high quality, and many more that are, you know, decent or whatever. I think they should do a better split than Apple, though. I think they should maybe do an 80-20 split for developers to developers in Microsoft, or, you know, 75-25 or even more. Because Apple does a 70-30 split. So every dollar you make, every dollar that goes to an application, you're making 70 cents of it, and they're making 30 cents. But I think that, you know, application developers are going to need to have some additional incentive, because this is not going to take off right away. I mean, there's 75 million iPhones and iPod Touches in the world. And so if they create an application on there, you know, even if it doesn't sell well, they're making some, they're getting some return for their investment, you know, I would assume. this is certainly a platform where they, you know, they would need to have a bit of a guarantee that they're going to make something in this market before they jump in. And so maybe an 80-20 or even an 85 or 90-10 split at the start maybe would be really good. I think the only further question is how is Microsoft going to get hardware developers, hardware creators to adopt the operating system? And I'll let you guys talk. I've talked a whole bunch here. I know because I did so much research on this today. Because Android is a weird variable because it is free.
Mm-hmm.
And it's open source. And I think that aside from, you know, if you don't have a huge operating system or application catalog, what you're looking at is marketing this off of, look at how simple it is, look at how fun to use it is, and Xbox Live. You know, and I don't know how much of a draw that's going to be for marketer or for manufacturers that are going to actually have to pay to use Windows Phone 7 series on their devices. So what do you guys think about that? How can they reconcile that with manufacturers?
I think it's going to be tough. I mean, because there's not a, if they don't have a big application base, like you said, you know, 1,000 apps would be nice. If they don't, it's going to be a tough sell because they're going to say, okay, you know, manufacturers are going to want to know what makes your phone different than like the Google phone or the Droid or whatnot.
Yep.
My take on it is Microsoft's definitely going to have to, you know, give developers, you know, motivation to use their operating system rather than Android. Maybe they could offer, like, have it be where certain devices have the Android operating system, but you can also, you know, get them with the Windows Mobile operating system.
Yeah, I doubt that, but
I mean, they both have the same capabilities. I don't see why not. But Microsoft is definitely going to have to get some apps or, you know, other motivations other than Xbox Live, you know, because other than that, they don't really stand a chance against Android, which is free.
And I think I wrote about this. I think people think of Apple as innovative. They think of Apple as producing quality products. And that's why even though that, you know, to some people the iPad is really great and some it's not, it's exciting to a lot of people. And Google, despite being massive, is regarded as benevolent and they give us lots of things and they're useful to us and they, you know, they're again something that people trust. They're a company people trust. Microsoft, you know, even though they're used so often in business, people don't feel the same way about them.
Yeah.
And I think it's just from a selling point, unless Microsoft is willing to throw like months and months and months and months of marketing and advertising behind this, you know, people are going to go to the store and they're going to just right away they're going to say, I want the Google phone. I want a phone with Google on it. Even though Google is just a company and they aren't anything else. I think, though, that if people, because looking at how much fun the UI looks and having first-hand experience with the Zune HD, I think that if this is placed in front of someone and they start playing around with it and there's enough there to keep them, you know, if there's enough useful stuff packed away into this that they can access quickly and if the phone is built as a stylish thing, it has the potential to really put Microsoft on a great footing for the mobile market. But it's going to take, you know, one part miracle and one part incredible marketing push and great phones and everything.
It's going to be tough, but I mean, I hope it turns out okay, because I mean, I love the look of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's gorgeous. There's no question about it. Now, it's funny, though. I think one of the things they have to have is they're making you have to have some sort of button for being on it, and they're making you have a Windows button, and I guess a back button and other things. The only thing I'm, you know, I mean, Microsoft is good at putting things in generic-looking cases to sell them. I mean, this, I guess, I think they've actually built this piece of hardware that they've showed it off on, but it's just basically a box. It's like a Zune HD shaped box, which, you know, is not going to stand out when you go into anywhere. But, you know, I guess a lot remains to be seen. There are certainly a lot of pro Windows or 7 series talk today. I think they really blew people away because of how underwhelming Mobile 6.5 was, which was supposed to be a fair jump forward. It was supposed to be, it had a vaguely Zune-like interface, which made people really worried that this would be a complete disaster. Because they had like the text scrolling menus of the Zune, and they had other things like that, and it just was boring. I mean, there's nothing about that, and it had the same Windows Mobile 6.5 business underlying it, so it wasn't like it was any kind of great technical innovation. But that's that, and we'll talk about that later. And I was talking to Mike the other day.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember about what, but about how I was completely done with fanboyism.
Oh yeah, that was when I told Paul I was buying an iTouch rather than the Zune, and
yeah, we were driving home. We were talking about that from Charlotte to Winston-Salem.
Yeah, I'm completely done with fanboyism. I used to be a Microsoft fanboy, and I hated people in their Macs and their iPods and their iTouches, thinking they were like better than everybody else, and then. You know, I'm a big, huge Nintendo fanboy, and I'd always buy, like, all Nintendo stuff, but, you know, I'm so done with that now because I just want to have, you know, like, what's the latest, coolest thing, you know?
Yeah, I think it's weird to sit back, but it was really the Zune HD because we were convinced it was going to be amazing. There was an awful lot of hype in the tech community about it, and then it came out, and it was totally underwhelming. I mean, they could have done so much to just bump the excitement up a little bit, you know, if they release some sort of SDK. To this date, though, there's absolutely nothing but the basic C platform for it. And, you know,
see, I know Paul, like, Paul within 30 days exchanged his for an iTouch, and he saw that, and, you know, I was being a stubborn Microsoft fanboy going, oh, I don't want to be the guy with the iTouch out, you know, thinking I'm better than everybody else, surfing the web really fast and stuff. But you know, I realize now that I sold my Zune HD, I realized, you know, it cost me. I lost $30 to that. I lost $30 to the Zune HD, probably more than that, if I would have just, you know, straight up exchanged it for an iPod Touch, so.
Yeah, I think what did it for me is, I know we talked about this a little bit, but it was just that they announced that, you know, games are coming in November, and I was like, that's past my return date. I'm not about to wait until November to see if it proves it's worth its money that I just...
Oh, and it didn't really. They have games.
I mean, if you really like playing Project Gotham, and if you like that terrible Twitter application...
Well, the Twitter app wasn't so bad. It could have been better if they had developers... And another thing is the internet was so slow. It was so unbelievably slow.
The Twitter app was just jerky, and it's gaudy in color and everything. Yeah, I don't understand the internet. That's the one thing that worries me about this, is because when the Zune came out, the Zune HD, people were saying, you know, a lot. It was like mixed for the reactions to the internet. They said, well, maybe this is great. Maybe this is a foreshadowing of Internet Explorer Mobile 7. And to me, that's not a good thing to say, because the internet is very slow in the Zune HD, and it does not display correctly compared to how Mobile Safari does. And it, you know, part of it is just that Internet Explorer is nowhere near as good at the web as WebKit is, which is used in the foundation of Chrome, Safari, and Opera, I think. And, you know, that's running on basic Internet Explorer, and this is running on Safari, and Safari is running on WebKit, and that's not. Which explains, you know, the internet, although I don't think it's incredibly fast on Androids, it has been for me. It's, you know, maybe it's just a test thing. It's been one of those things where I just can't even believe the difference in speed versus the Zune and the iPod. or iPhone or whatever. But that's that. And so, is there anything else? Is there any closing talks you guys want to say? I know I've spoken for about 93% of the show.
I have.
The thing I want to say is, Microsoft, you have yet another chance at impressing us with your technology, and just get some apps for this phone, and just don't blow your opportunity again, like you did with Windows Mobile 6.5.
Yeah, well, the Zune HD.
And the Zune HD.
Because it's a weird look back, because the Windows 7 is a resounding success. It's the fastest selling Windows they've ever produced.
Oh yeah, we just don't want to see history repeat itself.
Yeah.
Again.
Again. And they're, you know, this is just it's a different spot. They're against very difficult competitors. It's not like you've got Palm, BlackBerry, and Windows Mobile. You're looking at Android and iPhone, and then BlackBerry is a distant, well, as far as my mind share is concerned, it's a distant third. I'm not sure about the actual numbers, but I do know that Android and iPhone are huge. And we will be back next week. I've set up an actual Google Calendar for this, so we're not going to get behind it anymore, hopefully. ContraCast is going to record Monday nights, and then 5 Minutes of Interesting is Tuesday and Saturday. And we keep on pushing this, but very soon we hope to stream on Ustream around this time. It's hard to say. Sometimes, like earlier, we end up having bad connections, and the show just does not want to, you know, we have to break it up and edit it. And then sometimes we have what we've had now, which is essentially one solid take. You know, that's, as of now, it's 50-something minutes. And there's going to be no editing on this. So if you're maybe tuning into the Ustream, we'll see how things go. We also have to try and build an audience for that first, because the truth is that it's hard to do things when you don't have an audience. It's why it's easy for me to blog after a successful post last month, because I know that I have an increased audience size. I think that it's going to be hard for us to do this Ustream business if we have two people in there, because it will appear that they are stalkers. but we're going to try and do that very soon. You know, I think we've passed a quarter of 100 shows. I think 25 is a decent milestone. I know we gave 20 a better, a more full handshake.
I believe 50 and 100 would deserve a better.
Yeah, 50 and 100 are better. Yeah, I'm not really concerned about this show.
50 and 100 deserve their own rave parties.
As far as I'm concerned, though, I think the next show will probably be just on typical, what do they call it? Oh, you call it live to hard drive. and then after that, we're going to try and experiment. Maybe I'll try and do I'll work with 5 Minutes of Interesting and see if we can get that streaming. Of course, no one's going to listen because it's a 3.5-minute to 5-minute show. But once we perfect that business, we will get ContraCast on there, and, you know, we'll see how things work out. So I gave you guys last word a second ago, but is there any last word not related to any topics we talked about today?
I think we covered everything.
Well, anything you want to say about, I don't know, a Blizzard or something like that?
A company that's just outgrowing. There's a Blizzard going on right now, but last week we had a 3-day-long Blizzard. And two of those days, wind gusts were up to 70 miles an hour, average at about 40. So basically we were stuck in our dorm for, you know, a day until we'd all venture out in a long line and kind of get lost in the way to the food.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, you got, what, 2.5 feet of snow there? Did you get anything last night?
No, not last night, but right now. It actually melted over the weekend some because they ground warmed up. But right now we have about a foot left. Just sitting. And that's in a average ground without any snowbank or anything.
Mm.
But yeah.
Might be anything for you?
It was snow till Sunday, so.
Mm. I know we've been behind in ContraCast. I hope we keep up. Hopefully that calendar that Paul sent us will help us keep track of things. I hope we can get some better bandwidth for Ustream, and stay warm, guys.
Indeed, and so stay tuned. Next week we'll be back at about the same time, and you can look for a new episode. on, gosh, I cannot think of dates 7 days ahead. It'll be the 22nd of February. So, for everyone here at ContraCast, have a great week, everyone.